Welcome to the Training in Economic Discipleship based around 10 Biblical Principles of Kingdom Economics. This will be delivered with 30 podcasts or MP3s, beginning with a one-day or two-day consultation and finishing with a reporting back one day where you bring back your stories based on your evaluation. This podcast is a continuation of the teaching on cooperative economics, and we will look at this podcast at the application of the biblical principles in specific economic cooperatives and their structural outworkings. This leads us to the next topic, which is the topic of capital formation, or how the poor escape poverty. The question when we're together in the slums is not what can the rich do for the poor, but the question is how do the poor themselves escape poverty? And if they've found ways to do this, how do the middle class and the rich Christians assist them in the processes that they know work? And there are seven main answers that may surprise you. First is conversion and discipleship into communities or church growth. Second is migration. The best way to escape poverty is to migrate to a place where there is work. Thirdly, education, and particularly vocational education, but any form of education may enable people to move across the barrier to the middle class employment context. The fourth is what we want to concentrate on, which is cooperative capital formation. The fifth is land rights, and being able to obtain your own home. So that you have a certain economic independence and this becomes the basis for capital formation. And then health care. If you don't have your health, it's difficult to work hard to make money. We could restate these as formation of capital. First, spiritual capital. Second, relocation to contexts of capital. Thirdly, skills capital. Fourthly, economic capital formation or financial capital formation, which is what we normally think of when we speak of capital. Fifthly, collective political capital. And lastly, capitalizing land as a basis of then having assets against which you can get capital for expansion of business. And the healthcare can perhaps be restated as health capital that undergirds the ability to do these. Religious life is crucial. Multiplication of churches, Christian communities, is a basis of creation of power centers that in many countries are the only context that it can oppose oppression. Church is essential in the creation of a new motivated lifestyles, social communities and networks, and the formation of economic capital through forming cooperatives. They are significant in the formation of leadership that can enter into the social and political arenas. The teaching of the church on God as a cooperative being, its trainer in the character of working in unity, its teaching on the 10 economic principles in this study, these courses, its teaching on seeking justice and opposing injustice, these all lay a basis for the structural development of economic capital. The gospel results in capital formation, slowly at first. There is a phrase in missiology, the study of missions, called redemption and lift. Where a people get converted, they will, within the space of a generation, move up economically because of the impact of conversion on the moral character of their community. So over one or two generations, those poor who are converted, discipled, and formed into churches rise up economically because of motivation, perfectionism, hard work, and education. So let us look at wealth formation through cooperatives as a basis for uplifting a community. First, among the poor, there is money. Each person says they have no money, but by putting small amounts of money together regularly, week by week, into a common fund, capital can be accumulated within a collective group, and the fund will grow to a significant amount, which then can be given to one member, so they have the capital to start a small business or expand a small business. This person can then repay much more, so the speed of the second round is much faster. And a continual process like this within a group can end up with each of the group being able to access some capital and move to the next level of business. At which point they're all earning more, so the amount they put in if they start another round can be increased, and gradually the whole process can move up. This is one of the most significant ways that poor people escape poverty, and it happens all around the world with different names. In Cambodia, they call it a tong. In New Zealand, the Cambodians own all of the bread shops, the bakeries. And what they've done, they put their money together and help one person buy a bakery. And then they continue on and help the next, and gradually they bought up all the bakeries. It's the basis of microfinance. It's a basis of savings, which is affirmed in scriptures. Microfinance is based on debt, and that is not confirmed or not affirmed in the scriptures, but may be, as a business proposition, at times appropriate. The critical step is first the savings. The savings creates the cooperative. It creates certain skills to manage the money, to handle the bookkeeping. It gives a credibility of the group, which then can enable them to access money from the banks. So there is a progression here. First is conversion. That's critical. Integrity, thrift, hard work, sense of vocation, sense of identity. These come through faithfulness in attendance at church and growth in the church. And so that conversion is also leads into the second thing, which is the community of faith. And then from the community of faith, the development of self-help groups or cooperative savings groups. These are recognized internationally with the term ASCA or ROSCA. And ASCA is an accumulating savings credit association, and a ROSCA is a rotating savings and credit association. Once a group has demonstrated faithfulness in savings, then there is capital. So the fourth step is the cooperative capital investment in small businesses. Now, this is likely to fail unless there is some training in business skills for the group, for the individuals. And banks love to get into microfinance because they can make money off the poor. Poor are a good credit risk. But they don't want to put money into training people in skills. Whereas the nonprofits, the Christian nonprofits that are involved in microfinance, they do put money into training people in skills. Hence, they will cost a little bit more than money from the bank because they have to cover the costs of those trainings. But in the long run, this is more productive for the poor. So that leads us to the sixth point of microfinance. And if you're going to take a loan, you need to know it's going to be repaid. You don't take loans from banks that cannot be repaid. You don't take loans from banks for consumer items. A loan from a bank is a contract based on a measurement of risk by both the bank and you as the lender. And then the last point in here is migration. At any point in this whole process, people can migrate to a place where there is more work or more opportunity for production. So let me talk of the different varieties of cooperative groups. I mentioned these self-help groups. And these usually range from 10 to 20 people or families, usually meet each week with collective decision-making. And there are millions of people being benefited by these around the world. Now, the ROSCA that I mentioned before, the Rotating Savings and Credit Association, is a form of peer-to-peer banking and peer-to-peer lending. It's usually women who actually develop these because the husband is often out doing things. The women have more capacity for meeting it on a regular basis. In this particular group, one member is given the sum for her needs or business. Every transaction is seen during the meeting, so there's transparency and simplicity works well. Usually the group is limited to 6 months till everybody's accessed the fund. Then they can decide if they'll start again. So it doesn't accumulate, it rotates the money. ASCAs, the accumulating savings and credit groups, are a little more complicated. So leadership's appointed, at least a chairperson and a treasurer and a record keeper. Records are kept, surpluses are lent out. So as a person receives a loan, they have to have a business plan. They have to demonstrate they can repay the loan from the profits. And this set of savings is designed to keep growing and growing. And eventually this means that larger loans can be given out to members of the group. Now, while the church has been at the forefront of creating this across the world since the early 1900s, the banks now are getting into it globally. There's pressure on the banks to get into this. And the banking system have seen that they can make money from the poor. So it's called SHG linkages, self-help group linkages to the banks, in India at least. And so the banks are now giving loans to cooperative groups. It's both good and bad. I mean, it's good that the groups can now access banking finances. It's bad that the banks are not set up to help the groups. They're simply set up to make money off either the interest or if the group defaults, then through whatever way that they can. Then you've got mutual societies and credit unions. And in the West and in former British colonies, these are legally structured entities within those societies. And so these really are cooperative banks. Since they're mutual, any profit the bank makes doesn't go to the capitalist who's invested money. It goes back to the people who are contributing to the banks. And then you have a new idea, which is peer-to-peer formation networks. Peer-to-peer lending, which tries to cut out the banks, and it's using the internet so people can contribute via the internet to a fund, and the operators of the internet companies screen the proposals that are put to them. The money is then given as capital and then repaid. So that's another model. One of the most interesting models of this has been in New Zealand. The Holy Spirit, during the revival, spoke to a nurse in one church, and he gave her a vision that all of the members of the church would put their money in their mortgage payments. They'd put this into a cooperative fund of some kind. It took 2 years for the pastor and an elder to work out how that could be done. And so instead of paying the banks interest on their loans for the houses, now people take the loan from the cooperative at no interest, and this cuts down their payments by a third and cuts down the length of time they are paying for their house by a third, because they're not paying this extra amount out to the banks all the time. They're paying each other. It takes 7 years to actually save up some capital for a group, say, of 20 people, to then be able to give it to the first. After that, the times of payment decrease dramatically, and so by 11 years, everybody in that group will have been able to pay for a house. So these are some of the practical ways to go on.